Belly Up by Maggie Clark. Narrated by Michael Braun.
1. A Novuni Proverb. Dirt at dawn, dirt at dusk. But while the sun is up, O Mother, have mercy. Look what grows in us. A week after the courts declawed Imbra Thames, the Darwood twins and their cousin Paloma paid him a visit to finish the job. Imbra wasn't hard to track down. He'd returned to his auto shop overlooking Ezrin's Gulch, not 5 clicks from the nearest settlement, and lay under the hot, ticking metal of a ballast tractor when they rolled up in mud-spattered quads. The lesser Darwood, Hurley, pulled so hard on the creeper under Imbra's feet that Imbra hit his head on the exhaust line on his way out, and hardly recognized the trio during his first few seconds under the glare of the red-brown sun. But the meaner Darwood, Trip, wanted to take things slow, so he gave Imbra time to collect himself, even to look around. "Well, Dash," said Trip, using an ancient name, a childhood name for the man lying before him. "How's it feel? They didn't take away how easy you scared, did they? That'd have been some surgery, coward like you, always running at the first sign of trouble." Hurley snickered, at which point Paloma's continued silence caught Imbra's notice. The tall kid, 15 at best, had more anger wound up in his wiry frame than the Darwood twins combined. For the Darwoods, Imbra knew this was all domination sport, but in Paloma, Imbra sensed something deeper and more dangerous. He tried to remember the kid's lineage, but the local labor pool had always been built on comers and goers, most itching for just enough work to take them to the elevator, and from the elevator to the stars. But most never made it, and then things got desperate. People cut corners and other people all the time. Too much to recall every bad deal, every civvy who lost a friend or family to one bad bridge project or another. The hardness of life in the valley blurred memories at their edges. The crystal Imbra had been hooked on since childhood didn't help much either. "A little, actually." Imbra spoke lightly, a smile fixed on Trip. "Remember, fear's all about adrenaline. No adrenaline, no fight or flight. So when they stopped the signal that starts the whole business, they did me a bit of a service. Sure, go on, give me the beating of my life. Can't really stop you, but those mind games won't work either. So you might as well get started. Maybe in the ribs, though? I still sort of like this face." Trip smiled back, but he wasn't pleased. "You were shit before you went into the courts, Dash, and the stink on you's even worse now. Don't go putting on airs." Imbra shrugged and was about to reply when a swift boot heel to his stomach drove all the breath and a fair bit of spittle out of his mouth. Imbra doubled around the impact site and turned to catch a glimpse of Paloma, already advancing for another stomping, this time to the chest. The kid was pure rage as he moved. The wildness of his kicks and punches a sure sign that he hadn't done much proper fighting, but before Hurley and Trip could pull Paloma off, Imbra had at least pieced together some of the kid's complaint from the rare word flung between blows. Mother. Murdered. Lowlife. "Oh, right," thought Imbra, vaguely between strikes. "Her." With no heightened blood pressure, no rush of heat in his muscles with the release of fat cells for future energy, no surge in lung capacity, no loss of hearing or vision to focus his efforts on the immediacy of response, Imbra experienced the beating acutely. His body surprised by each vividly felt blow. At one particularly hard hit, which flung him from the creeper, the back of his head bouncing off the gravel, Imbra wondered if his body would even figure out when it was dying, and if, maybe, That was what was happening now. But then he heard the Darwood twins.
Easy. Settle down, pal. That's enough.
And the sudden stillness of air and light and shadow all around him gave Imbra pause for breath. He coughed and spat out a tooth, while above him the three men conferred.
Hey, he dies, and anyone finds out, you'll get the same treatment. Understand?
But he deserves it.
Sure, pal. Sure he does.
Trip clapped a hand hard on Paloma's shoulder.
But you kill him, and that's it, see? Keep him around, though, knowing his place, and we've got it made. Dash here will always be on hand to fix our rides, or pull our freight, or give us that sweet little hovercraft whenever we want it. Besides, putting him in the ground won't bring her back. So what's the point? The waste and the risk of it, you know?
Paloma's hands curled into fists as he stared down at Imbra.
Some worlds, they put garbage like you into holes in the ground, and they leave you there for years.
Trip sighed.
Yeah, yeah. When the state pays for it all, and no one gets anything out of it, and everyone's still pissed when the assholes get out with time served. Trust me, pal. This is better. Social justice with a little on the side for us keepers of the peace. You, Hurl, and me. Right, Dash? You gonna contribute now? For once in your sorry excuse of a life?
Imbra sat up slowly, arm braced at his ribs, another mouthful of blood hucked to the ground.
Could have just asked. You needed something realigned. That head of yours, maybe. Nah, Trip's a believer in even trades.
Hurley bared a grin with wide gaps, teeth lost from too much time in the pits.
Body work for body work. Speaking of which,
Trip tipped his head to the garage.
We're taking Bullet for a spin. Loan her till our main rides get spiffed up. You don't mind, do you, Dash?
Imbra nodded to a shelf through the open door.
Key pass. Top drawer. Knock yourselves out.
Preferably into a lava flow. Trip whistled.
That's not very nice, Dash.
Hurley approached Imbra as if to further the point. Imbra eyed Hurley's boots, then the rest of him.
No, I guess not, said Imbra,
meeting Hurley square in the eye.
Not fair to Bullet, going down with the likes of you.
Hurley was smarter than Paloma about his blows, and the ones to Imbra's hip ricocheted through Imbra's bone, sure to leave a deeper ache and more persistent bruising. But Trip had the hovercraft out soon enough, its silver coat glinting in the midday light, and Hurley was quick to join him up front. Only Paloma lingered by the ballast tractor, where Imbra had propped up himself against one of its wheels.
You should be begging for your life, said the kid, like she did.
No, she didn't.
Imbra took a ragged breath, the ache in his chest starting to constrict in ways even the D-Claw couldn't prevent.
I was higher than you'll ever know, but that much is true. I panicked, kid. I already had the goods, but I hit her anyway. Hard. And I ran. Still, she was strong. Your mom, at the end, she just...
Imbra tapered off as Paloma leaned in and took him by his shirt collar and clocked him across the cheekbone. Calmer this time.
Aim's improving too, thought Imbra, as the Darwood twins called out, Pal, you coming or what?
And Paloma, dropping his mother's killer and shaking his hand out, stepped over Imbra's body and said,
Yeah, hold up, I'm done.
But Imbra, watching the kid not so much as glance back as he stalked off, knew that Paloma would return, and sooner rather than later. And next time, he'd come alone. Stev Biggs, The court-appointed adjustment counselor squinted sideways at the shiner turning Imbra's right cheekbone into a spray of nebula purples and dusky gray pinks.
"You ought to be more careful around the tow trucks," said Biggs. "Rough business, walking into a hook and chain like that."
"Comes with the territory." Imbra offered Biggs a cup of roast. "How's the war?"
"Which one?"
Biggs settled at Imbra's bench and scratched under his wide-brimmed hat, surveying the lay of the land. Graffiti across the walls, tool cases in disarray, more than a little blood spatter on the concrete floor.
"Seen plenty of action yourself, it seems."
"Gulch rats. Big ones."
"No kidding."
Biggs took a long, loud slurp of brew, eyeing his charge over the mug.
"They'll settle eventually, you know. There's not much sport in it, and soon they'll feel ashamed with themselves for doing it at all. That's usually how it goes."
"Or they'll take that shame out on me, too, for making them feel something in the first place.
Starting to think we could all do with a declaw, in the valley at least."
Biggs set down his mug.
"That kind of attitude might as well hand everything over to the Allegiance. We need more fight, if you ask me, if we're going to get through it all."
"That bad?"
"You tell me. General Aceris has the shipyards working all hours, trying to double the fleet by the equinox. Ask me, she's not going to make deadline, but at least the attempt will improve foot traffic around these parts. Open up the mines, drive recruitment, see more money in bridge works again. Might even be good for your business. Who knows?"
Imbra's answering snort nudged Biggs into a bit of a smile.
"Looks like we didn't take all the fight out of you, did we?"
But that "we" gave Imbra pause, the sudden schism of it. Biggs as old friend. Biggs as brother's keeper. He studied the calluses on Biggs' hands, only a little darker than his own. One creation story going that the sun had scorched their ancestors in a fit of rage. Others saying that the sun loved them so much it tried to get too close, until its children cried out, "Mother, you're hurting me." And the sun, ashamed when she saw what she had done, blushed a livid red-brown forever. Both tales are as good as true. All life on Novan a matter of dualities.
"I've heard the stories," said Imbra, "about the ones who walk out of surgery and right off a cliff. Some for what they'd done to deserve the declaw in the first place. Some for what they were afraid everyone else would do once the law was through."
"But not you." "No, not me." Imbra's eyes gleamed hard. "Sitting in the courts those last few weeks, while they cleaned all that shit from my system to prep for surgery, I found religion instead.
I'm afraid to ask which."
Imbra nodded.
"Good."
Biggs didn't press. They sat and drank quietly as a long haul rig rumbled into view, kicking up dust coming past Ezrin's Gulch, then slipping into oblivion around the next hill.
"Could always use more men in the shipyards," said Biggs at last.
"Sure. The first place the Allegiance will target when their fleets arrive."
"You don't know that."
Biggs sounded almost chipper.
"Could go for the lasers first. Then take out the Outer Moon defenses. Hop, skip, and a jump to Novan Prime after that. Seed a solar flare and take off running. You never know what the Allegiance has in mind."
"Or what they want, exactly. The people? The resources?"
"Our guesses get even weirder, up at the courts. There's one woman in archives who thinks..."
Biggs seemed about to start on a longer spiel, but one glance at Imbra's ring of bruises gave him pause and softened the sudden heat in his face.
"Anyway, all I'm saying is it'd be quicker if it happened up in orbit. Down here with the locals and your past."
"All life's a risk," said Imbra. "You know that."
Not everyone gets to pick where they make a last stand, though.
Biggs adjusted his hat and stood.
But I guess you're sure you've chosen yours.
The statement grew into a question after Biggs set off, and after Imbra returned to cleaning up the shop. The next run of settlement boys came at dusk, mostly to try to rattle him a little on their way out to some pylon party in the valley. Paloma wasn't among them. Paloma came in the night, halfway to dawn, and not, after all, alone. Imbra saw the revolver before the whites of the kid's eyes at the end of the drive. Imbra watched him a while, then put the kettle on. Paloma's hands shook around the firearm as he stepped into the light of the garage, so Imbra moved nice and slow, setting two mugs on a table between them.
Would have been easier if I'd been in bed, I guess, said Imbra. Sorry, kid. I'm not sleeping so well these days.
You think this is a joke? This isn't a joke.
Imbra nodded twice, the second time at the revolver. That thing registered? Paloma hesitated. Registered is no good. They'll track you and declaw you. Then you'll end up like me.
You think I shouldn't have been done in earlier? All the shit I did for Valley mobsters, all the things I did while high, but it took a real slip-up. The wrong key pass in the wrong place for the courts to catch me. You want to do this, kid, you gotta move in the shadows.
Paloma's eyes darted to the implements on hand. The pry tools, the welding rods, even the impact wrenches, if applied with pure blunt force against their target.
No, too much mess, said Imbra.
You had the right idea with the firearm. You just need an unregistered number. But I know a guy.
Oh, frig off!
Paloma raised the revolver tensely.
I told you this wasn't a joke.
And I get that. Only, see it from my end for a sec. You come in, and sure, I'm bigger than you, but if I try to stop you, your adrenaline's gonna kick in more than it already has, while I'm still poking along like this.
And for what?
Maybe I get the gun from you. Maybe it goes off while I try. But a gun's still better than some of the stuff I've got in here. So yeah, if you go with the gun, it's easier for us both.
And I already have one. What's it to you if I get caught?
Paloma's brows beaded with perspiration. Imbra held his gaze.
You're right, kid. I'll be dead. But you're here because I did something rotten. Something I truly regret. You think I want to go down knowing I've ruined your life twice?
Paloma snorted, but also watched, finger restless on the trigger, while Imbra took up a thick black marker from the table and scrawled a name and number on a bit of packaging.
Here, said Imbra. This is the guy. He's down in the gulch, little outpost away from the road. We can take bullet, go together. You go in, say I sent you, get the gun. We'll already be in good territory for digging, so then I just fix myself a nice spot, and you shoot me into it. You'll have to do cleanup, but way out there, no one's gonna come looking.
Like I'm supposed to believe you'll help me kill you.
Imbra shrugged.
Shoot me then. Right now. Just saying, it's not smart.
Yeah, you say too much.
Paloma raised the revolver again, the one deliberate act in his repertoire. Imbra reached for his mug, turned it in his hands, inhaled. At the end of a long sip, his brains still more or less intact, Imbra nodded to the far wall.
Key pass is back in the top drawer. Ever driven hover before?
The stretch of road between Imbra's garage and the bottom of the valley was wide enough for Paloma to get a feel for bullet without too much risk of dropping off a cliff. Auto would kick in regardless, but Imbra had seen novices panic and override, then overcorrect while their hovers were already boosting themselves horizontal, which just led to the whole craft flipping back, and sometimes striking the cliff on its tumble to the ground. Up in orbit, Bubble ships avoided the problem by restricting humans to gunner and maintenance duty. On the subcontinent, as with the rest of the system, it was the rare colony that let organics behind any wheel, ground, water, or sky. But Nove's northern continent, with all its geological upheavals and active volcanic sites, remained an uneasy mix of new and old. Neural implants and road warriors, space elevators and end-of-the-line towns, tall tales of interstellar combat and local bridges that were always falling down. Courts that knew they weren't up to the task of keeping the peace, but kept swinging dead weight where they could. Paloma pushed the accelerator hard, too hard for his first time behind the wheel, but Imbra knew this was not the moment to tell the kid to ease up. When they hit the end of the road, at the bottom of the gulch, Imbra pointed to their destination, the only light in the whole stretch of valley desert, and Paloma gave him a withering look before cranking the engine again. Recent flash flooding had left the ground thick with mud, but bullets surged through at top speed, veering only slightly as Paloma adjusted for the loss in friction. Not bad. Imbra glanced at the kid again. A word of praise as toxic as a word of caution under the circumstances, but still tempting. Before long, they came to a stop outside the little shack. Want me to come with you? Paloma's eyes narrowed at the quickness of Imbra's words. Stay here, said the kid, taking the key pass with him, the revolver tucked into his waistband. Paloma had a harder time in the mud than bullet, so it took him a few slips to get his bearings and reach the front door. Imbra looked up while he waited, trying and failing to triangulate the shipyards above. Imagining General Aceris at the head of her new fleet, pulling off another system-saving maneuver like the one that first made her famous, during the Allegiance standoff at Fort Five. A satellite passed overhead, and then the shot rang out. Imbra stood by the hovercraft when Biggs eventually emerged, a rifle slung over the adjustment counselor's shoulder. Good, said Biggs. Figured you wouldn't be far off. Someone calls using your name. That's a sign of trouble for sure. But how did you... He's just a kid. You didn't... Biggs cut a hand through the air. Only spooked him. He's quiet now. Conspiracy to commit murder, though. That'll be something for the courts. Even with the circumstances? Especially with them. Even at his age. They'll try him as an adult for targeting a D-claw, and do the same to him for sure. Counterproposal. Biggs tipped his hat. Shoot. I go to the shipyards. Kid comes with me. Even in the low light, Biggs's face cast in shadow, Imbra could see both brows rise. He'll come at you again, you know. Maybe, said Imbra. But a kid who goes on a planned solo hit in this neck of the valley probably doesn't have much of a life worth fighting for. Biggs considered, then nodded to the door. And if he says no? Give him his options. You'll see. Imbra waited while Biggs went back in and talked to the kid. Neither voice got loud enough for Imbra to make out the state of things, but he had plenty to keep himself occupied. The low wind over damp desert underbrush, the suck of mud underfoot, the residual heat of old bullet, to be left with the garage in Biggs's care by dawn. If he squinted in the dark of night, Imbra could just make out the far ridge of the gulch, where he'd played with Trip and Hurley and Biggs in another lifetime, a world where every child had been a runner for someone, and Imbra had simply been the fastest, for better and for worse. In time, Paloma came out glaring, hands tucked under his armpits, cheeks shining with what Imbra allowed might be condensation, while Biggs laid out details for their trip to the space elevator. Imbra tried to feel nearly as much of a rush, a heat inside him like the kid had, and would continue to have, so long as he kept clear of the courts. But in his triumph, Imbra couldn't even rely on a rush of oxytocin. Too dangerous, the courts had decided, because of its role in defensive aggression between social groups. So Imbra settled for a nod to both, and said nothing when Paloma answered with a gob of spit at his feet. Imbra waited in the hovercraft while the kid visited his mother's grave, one last time, before the pair was flung up to the stars. 2. A Novuni proverb. When the lava runs, you run. When the water runs, you swim. Imbra had tinnitus within a week in orbit, which helped tune out some of his new supervisor's wilder conspiracy theories, but which also made keeping track of Paloma all the harder. The shipyards, an intricate, sprawling lattice of production modules dedicated to various stages of robotics and manual assembly, testing, and resource management, differed considerably from the large, open factories on Nove's surface. As such, it had never occurred to Imbra that the decibel range in specific space modules, while tolerable to anyone with factory or garage experience, might still be wholly unsuited for long-term auditory health. His supervisor, Miha, liked to say that this was proof they were all being phased out in favor of the machines, but Miha also made no secret of his affiliation with the Path of the Vengeful Sun, so Imbra learned to take the burly man's fatalism as lightly as possible. "Way I hear General Aceris talking," said Miha on Imbra's second day. "Could be. We're all here as decoys, you know. The Allegiance sees that all our manpower's up in orbit, so it ignores the satellites with almost no human presence. But that's where the General gets crafty, see? She has the real weapons waiting on Hav or Isla or one of the other big moons, and she blasts Allegiance to smithereens while they're doing the same to us up here." "The Ceres wouldn't use us like that," another mechanic, Grot, hollered down corridor. "She's never left a man behind, and she's not starting now. Don't you listen to him, Kitten." Kitten was a term from Nove's subcontinent, where D-Claws had service roles waiting for them right out of the courts. The South was generally the cleaner, more urban hemisphere, where abuse still happened, but in nicer outfits and living quarters. Imbra hadn't decided if Grot was making some sort of overture, in keeping with one of the major service roles for kittens down south. But the northerner kept his distance just in case. The beatings, at least, had ceased upon arrival, leaving only Paloma to watch for in the night. Miha exhaled loudly at Grot's retort. "You think that's leaving a man behind? To give everything in service to our people, our solar system, that's why we're here, you damned Southie." "Hell with that," said Grot. A man of her loving embrace, Imbra surmised, from the tattoo on his arm when he floated a drill up corridor. "I'm here to build things and to fix things. Don't care who I'm building and fixing them for, so long as we're all alive at the end of the day. Life's what's worth fighting for. Mine and yours. And even Kitten's, too." "Go on, then," said Miha. "Run and hide when Allegiance comes." "I will," said Grot. "And you all should, too." Imbra saw more than heard Miha's answering grunt. The ringing in his ears let him turn his thoughts elsewhere, as a more heated argument ensued between co-workers. To the long line of bubble ships in need of supercooling assembly before central processors could be installed. To the heady stink of so many bodies in cramped, strangely sterile corridors. To the latest scuttlebutt about how the new kid, Paloma, was already hitting it off with one of the electrical technicians, Ren, a young woman of 17. Smart, vivacious, reckless. The kind of girl who'd listen to the kid's sad story and maybe offer herself up as a partner in crime. A better ally for vengeance than Trip and Hurley, to be sure. So Imbra slept lightly, if at all, and always, after the first week, with one hand, then the other, cupped to an ear. Testing his hearing. waiting for some sign of release. Accepting, in the meantime, the incessant hum of shipyard life. On Imbra's recommendation to Biggs, Paloma had arrived at the shipyards with a ticket to flight school, an anachronism from when pilot training came first in a ship officer's education. Mostly, the kid learned how to handle weapons systems on a variety of fleet ships, and the ins and outs of basic in-flight maintenance. At first, Paloma was too young for guaranteed field placement and seemed more likely to end up with Wren on ground crew. Safer than most for the remainder of the war, with an education and time to reconsider the whole of his young life before heading home. But then the Allegiance's next fleet arrived 4 weeks early, at the outskirts of the heliosphere, and took out General Aceris's first line like a hot knife through butter. Overnight, mechanics throughout the shipyards turned into seasoned strategists. Every spare bulkhead was filled with grids of the solar system, sketched and scratched out and sketched in again to show the strengths and weaknesses of possible attacks in 2D and 3D space. Every active flight officer suddenly became an expert on AI resistance tactics, too, relentlessly debating programming modifications to allow for riskier, more spontaneous in-flight maneuvers, and everyone, it seemed, had plenty of counsel to offer General Aceris, already in transit to prepare for the next assault, although none would utter those same words of military wisdom to fellow grunts in their sleeping modules first. "Ah, you wouldn't understand," went one excuse. "For her ears only," went another. Imbra's own ears were still ringing for unrelated reasons, and after listening to his bunkmates worry the subject of Aceris's next moves for well over an hour, he proposed a saying from up north about backseat driving. Forgetting, until the words came out, that his audience was mostly from the subcontinent, where nobody drove in the first place, so the analogy fell flat. Next, he tried a Novuni-wide standard about lava and water, which did better. But even then, his fellow mechanics disagreed about where the Allegiance stood on that figurative fight-or-flight scale. Members of her loving embrace clung to the words lava and run in the ancient saying. Those on the path, though, remained partial to swim, whether the invaders had more in common with cool water or not. Grot asked if Imbra was scared, in trying to get the rest of the men to change the subject, but Imbra shook his head. "Just tired," he said, turning in his bunk. But his fatigue was no match for the nervous energy of his co-workers, each buoyed by hormonal rushes almost alien to him now. "The point is, we need to land one good kick in their teeth," said one of the men on the path, while Imbra tried to sleep. "Something nuclear, right in the heart of it all." "You volunteering to get close enough for that?" one of the loving embracers replied. "You think their AIs would even let you if you made the attempt?" "Well, no, but that's why we..." And so minutes turned into hours. By the time his bunkmates finally started sawing in their bunks, Imbra had given up on sleep and lay awake churning over the questions even their most relentless chatter had failed to answer. He could almost visualize the gap in all their proposed strategies, a hole that no mere boast of overt aggression could ever hope to fill. The hole was about the size and shape of a cornered gulch rat down on Nove, once the ragged, prickly thing had dropped to its back. Claws up, eyes red, and paws out in something like submission. Like, but not quite. That soft gray underbelly always a trap. By morning shift, footage of the heliosphere disaster from satellites in orbit around Resu played on repeat across mess hall monitors. A not-so-subtle reminder to get back to work, because the whole damned fleet was counting on them. The first thing Imbra noticed was the speed of the Allegiance ships, tearing into view in diamond formation, precisely where they'd do the most damage to Novan Prime defenses, but then slowing quickly enough to do a couple other brutal sweeps of the region. Within minutes, the only signs of the solar system's outer shielding and ring guard were a few glinting pieces of debris, quickly lost to the dark. The first time the images cycled through, Miha prayed for the dead in one way, and Grot in another, while Imbra studied the grainy images with an attention like reverence. Taking notes, hearing certain gears fall into place behind the ringing in his ears.
Huge energy consumption, said Grot, coming down from a fraction of the speed of light like that, not to mention the jerk.
Possibly no organics on board, Miha agreed. The formation pattern seemed rigid enough to suggest complete autopilot anyway.
Even then, said Imbra, you gotta protect the processors.
Ion shielding, said Grot. Mini magnetospheres keep most of the nastiness out.
Imbra whistled. Even more energy consumption for that setup, though. His co-workers nodded, Miha rapping idly at the table as he did. At the far end of the mess, the youngsters showed up in officer's dress, Paloma and Ren among them.
All getting bubble ships now, said Miha. Poor bastards.
Not official yet, said Grot. The general can still change her mind.
Why would she? You got a better idea? With the Allegiance already at our doorstep? Should be thanking Mother you're not among them. Someone's got to prep the fleet.
Imbra looked without looking at Paloma's bench, and thought he saw Paloma look without looking back at him, too. Ren, though. Ren stared straight at Imbra, hard as ice, then squeezed Paloma's wrist. Grot, catching the chill of it, winked at Imbra.
Not to worry, kitten. They can't come for you now. Not with all this going on.
Imbra shook his head. Not what I'm worried about. The last of the gears turned freely now, though his heart didn't even have the decency to beat wildly at the risk he knew he was entertaining, for himself and one other. He pushed calmly from the table instead. I'll be in coolant if you need me. We still keep copper wiring in third wing storage. Miha nodded and waved him off. Imbra hesitated, then took the long way out of the mess, across the room, past the youngsters, elbowing Paloma hard as he floated through. Paloma needed little provocation, arms and legs lashing out, one hand finding Imbra's jumpsuit and the other, as a fist, Imbra's jaw. The other youngsters fell back, making room for ensuing blows, while the older crew proved slow to step in. When two other mechanics eventually did, though, Miha could have sworn that Imbra had Paloma's ear and was whispering something serious enough to give Paloma pause, fist upraised for another blow.
The hell in Mother's name is he up to? Said Miha to Grot.
Grot shrugged.
Kittens, man, he said. Can't feel much, so you'd be surprised the lengths they go to feel anything at all.
Imbra might have agreed if he'd overheard Grot's comment. As far as lack of feeling went, even the shipyard shifts weighed hard on a body that had no ability to switch into a more vigorous working mode and kept trying to nod off while engaged in high-intensity tasks. That lack of feeling also went some way toward explaining why he kept flexing and clenching his hands en route to the assembly line. He knew his idea was sound, in theory, but he still struggled with why he'd picked the kid to make it a reality. Paloma could easily inform on him, or tell Ren, who'd do the same. And for what reasonable payoff? Imbra had been part of enough precarious ventures to know that chances were slim Paloma would actually show up after shift, let alone put himself in a bubble ship of Imbra's choosing and special design when the fleet deployed.
Stupid,
Imbra muttered. But with the D-claw firmly in place, he hadn't even the anger to punch a bulkhead. He let his clenched fist rest at his thigh instead, nails digging into the fabric of his jumpsuit, while he studied the coolant systems and let the steps in his plan turn into mantra, joined only by the constant ringing in his head. General Aceris debarked from her flagship, the NSS Ragnara, during the next day shift. That evening, The whole of the shipyard's team received debrief about the Novuni's plan of attack. Some in Imbra's quarters grumbled about the intended scope of the battlefield, but the crankiest mechanics were those working remote weapons design, which only made sense, since the bulk of Aceris's plan relied on letting the Allegiance fleet get close, very close, and attempting to outmaneuver on familiar ground, with plenty of asteroid debris to use for cover and collision courses. There were too many variables for a human to work out, but with AIs in control of the ships, programmed in the months since Fort 5 with the trajectories of tens of thousands of known minute astral bodies, it almost seemed feasible. Still, the numbers weren't promising. Even official holovids made no secret of the fact that the bubble ships, streakers, battlecruisers, and lancers stood outnumbered 3-1 by the waves of Allegiance ships gathered just past the gas giant Drea. No wonder, then, that Grot soon joined the other spiritual objectors on the last shuttle bound for Hav, the planet's largest moon and the Novuni territory best equipped for long-term underground shelter from any invading party. No wonder, too, that Miha and the others on the path of the Vengeful Sun took renewed vigor in their work, eagerly priming the fleet as best they could, knowing full well in their aching hearts that the misery of unwanted existence would be at an end soon. And maybe, Imbra reasoned, why Paloma showed up outside his quarters the night before departure after all. Alone and unarmed.
"Did you tell anyone?" said Imbra. "Even..." "She wouldn't let me come if I did. And she'd be right. Frig. Even leaving her with the others out there, while I go off and do this fool thing. It's a death sentence, isn't it?"
The question landed as a statement, so Imbra didn't reply at once. He glanced around the otherwise empty module, all his bunkmates busy drinking in the mess, but there was nothing to offer the kid, not even a squeeze bottle of water.
"Most ship's officers are from the south," he said instead. "Nice place. Rich. Automated. So, what? This is some sort of weird valley loyalty?"
"No. I'm not even sure I can do loyalty." Imbra frowned, hands palm up. "No rush of oxytocin, no real bonding, right? At least, I think. I don't know. It's all..."
He cradled his head in his hands, massaging his throbbing temples, hoping to lessen the ringing. Paloma looked at him with the revulsion that only youth, in all its decisiveness and propensity toward binary thinking, could dredge up.
"I don't care," he said heavily.
Imbra raised his gaze and sniffed. Moisture settled strangely, high in the sinuses in zero-G.
"Right, of course. I only meant that..."
He took a long breath.
"You can drive.
Most of these others, especially from the south, they can't. Too used to giving it all up to the AIs. More interested in weapons control than steering, in any case."
Paloma watched his mother's killer steadily. "And that'll save me?"
Imbra had to fight back a desperate laugh, the closest to fear he'd come in weeks.
"Oh, mother," he said. "Kid, that might save us all."